I'd like to start with Syria. Surely, Harry, for a ceasefire, you need to cease firing.
Good way of describing it. Indeed, one of the problems with the ceasefire is that there is no cease firing. And what I believe the Kofi Annan plan represents, and remember, Kofi Annan has been appointed not only as the envoy of the United Nations, but the joint envoy of the United Nations and the League of Arab States. His plan is, in a sense, the last chance saloon for Syria. There have been so many attempts, so many resolutions, so many meetings in order to try and find a solution to the Syrian problem. We have discussed this quite in detail in previous podcasts. There have been problems because, on the one hand, people want to get rid of Bashar al-Assad and the Syrian regime, but on the other hand, aren't sure what to replace it with because there is no clarity yet with the opposition, because there are so many dynamics intertwined in Syria in terms not only of the country itself, but also the region. So in a sense, Kofi Annan, as a very consummate diplomat and politician, was plucked out by all the members, the permanent members of the UN Security Council, to try and find a way, not of overthrowing or getting rid of Bashar al-Assad as previous attempts have tried, because that has clearly not succeeded yet, but to try and find a compromise where the opposition and the authorities, those with the regime and those against it, come together to dialogue and find a way forward.
Now, I called our last podcast on this subject Syria Solving the Unsolvable, so we should be in no doubt as to the scale of the task that Kofi Annan faces. But just tell us a little bit, what is the Annan plan?
Well, the Annan plan consists of various points. A lot of people are now focusing on the fact of how many monitors or observers would he be able to deploy through the United Nations in the country itself. That is one part of it, but there are other sides to it. For instance, all the heavy armaments of the regime, the Syrian army, regular army, they have to be withdrawn from all parts of Syria. Political prisoners and detainees will have to be released. Journalists and people should be allowed entry into the country so that eventually there is enough confidence, between inverted commas again, for the different parties to sit together and talk and find a way out of this crisis that to date has cost roughly 11,000 to 12,000 lives. Now, that is a lot of lives in a country that is, in my opinion, critical to the future of the whole region. Now, what is happening is that even as we are trying now to see those observers or monitors deployed, the Syrian regime is playing cat and mouse games. It is not giving visas or issuing visas to all the monitors that the UN and the Arab League want to send in. So it's being picky as to who goes in and who doesn't. It is also continuing with the bombardment and the shelling of different parts of the country. So as a matter of fact, what you said is absolutely right. For a ceasefire to become a reality, you need to have cease firing, and that's not happening. Now, what worries me in all this is not only the regrettable amount of lives that have been lost, it's not the chaos of the country. There are parts of the country in Homs, in Idlib, in the northwest, in Daraa, which are war zones. That in itself is frightening. But what is equally frightening is as we go forward without any glimmer of getting this situation at least contained, if not resolved at the moment, the closer we are going to an all-out civil war. And we are already seeing that the opposition, which until now had relied almost entirely on peaceful demonstrations and protests, had, by virtue of the fact that they need to defend themselves against vicious attacks by a regular army that is so well armed, that it is turning into a bloodier and more armed confrontation. And that worries me enormously for Syria and for the neighbors of Syria.
Ah, you talk about the neighbors of Syria. If we pick up on Lebanon, I don't know if this is the case because I only read reports, but didn't the rebel fighters actually for the first time, try an attack by sea somewhere near the Lebanese border?
They did. I mean, the interesting thing about it is there is so much of a fog of confusion at the moment that whenever we have explosions, whether in the rural areas surrounding Damascus, whether in Idlib in the northwest, whether in Homs, in Hama, in Dara, in Syria itself, in Damascus itself, what happens is that immediately the regime and the television channels that support the regime immediately ascribe all those attacks to what they call terrorists. And of course, they're not terrorists, they're just protesters and demonstrators. And of course, the demonstrators then say, no, it's not us, it's the regime. So there is a little bit already of the beginning, not only of civil war, but of a loosening of any sort of accountability and monitoring that we can do to see what's happening. And that is, to me, worrying, because Syria is a mosaic of different ethnic communities, largely Sunni, but there are others as well. We need to make sure that the Druze, the Kurds, the Shi'i, the Alawites, the Christians, the Sunni, all together, if they start fighting even more, then this is not going to end well, and it bodes badly, not only to Lebanon, which is the weak neighbor who's always the recipient or the repository of any violence or any machinations that are hatched up in Syria, but also don't forget Iraq, don't forget Turkey. Turkey has now tens of thousands of Syrian refugees in white camps across the border. There have been incursions and shellings by the Syrian army into Turkey. Now, Turkey is a NATO ally. Turkish authorities are not happy with what's happening in Syria. So, in a sense, we are really facing a critical condition. And this is why I call Kofi Annan's plan a last chance saloon, although for me, it only is a way of compromising between Russian and Chinese positions on the one hand, Western and Gulf positions on the other. Will he succeed? If I talk to many, many people, pundits, commentators, observers, people involved in the region itself, a lot of them would cast doubt on whether this one stands any greater chance than any other previous resolution. But then what other options do we have? That is the big question mark. Short of a military style Srebrenica or Kosovo or Libya kind of deal, I can't really see how we are going to be able to resolve this conundrum that we're all facing.